All right, it is 8:07 on a Tuesday morning. The Sweet 16 for both the men and women are set. We got Sweet 16 hockey. Omaha takes on Minnesota at 7:30 on Thursday night against Sioux Falls. Tim Kruger, who loves Minnesota, probably got the Gophers over the Mavs, goal and a half favorite in that game, joins us now in studio, back from Pittsburgh. TK Brackets on Twitter. Good morning.
Got the first period under, too.
Okay. All right. Going to be, I think that'll be a good 2-3 matchup. We'll get into that later on the podcast when you invite me on to Blue Jay Banter. How was Pittsburgh?
I had never been to Pittsburgh.
Okay.
I got to tell you, I wouldn't say blown away, but it was nice.
Okay. Happer didn't think so. Yeah, you know, because it's a little bit older.
On the first day in the food line, that was it.
Was it just gloomy? Is it because it was just gloomy?
Well, the weather was horrible. Yeah. I mean, we froze our tail off walking 8 blocks to the arena. But the architecture downtown, like the buildings are not these old, you know, I think everybody has this idea that it's this old steel city. It's not. The architecture's unbelievable. I mean, it really is. And I'm not an architect. It's the first thing you notice is the buildings. I mean, they're just. And it's fairly clean. Yep. Don't feel threatened walking around anywhere. I did notice we had this discussion where most downtowns, big city, medium city, you know, whatever you want to do, you don't have to walk very far to find a bar. It seemed like the bars were stretched out quite.
A lot of neighborhood bars.
Yeah. Like we got to a certain section, then there was a couple, but I mean, you had to kind of walk a ways to go somewhere.
Yeah, and you didn't go over to the north side, so.
No.
Or Squirrel Hill or anything like
no,
that.
No.
All right. Saturday night, double overtime game, the emotions, because you know both of them very well, and Dana and Mac, and the way that game played out. Did you learn anything new about this Creighton team through that 50 minutes of basketball, other than guys have some incredible stamina that were wearing blue?
I just can't get over or get past. Like, and I talked with a couple of coaches, and they totally agreed. You just don't win many games when Dana Altman's up four with less than a minute to go. Just don't. That's when he closes the door. He's done it his whole career. And it just, I mean, I was packing my stuff up with like 45 seconds to go because I've seen this movie before, right? And to come back and, you know, it took Dana a while in his press conference, but he finally said, you know, I messed up. I had a freshman taking the ball in, threw it right to who they wanted it thrown to. And, you know, the kid is crying. And, you know, Dana's not very, you know, touchy-feeling. He's got his arm around the guy. I mean, you had to feel for him. But, Baylor works on that shot a lot. And he carried this team. You know, it's weird to say that when you have Kalkbrenner and Trey and the contributions Ashworth made. But Baylor's really really, when they've needed a bucket, he's been there, and he was there again.
Connor brought up something. We were doing our halftime hits and had mentioned because I kind of noticed this too, and when he brought it up against Oregon, it was, speaking of Baylor, his overall body language or his overall active role in the offense throughout the game where he didn't look like himself at times, and maybe it was the way he was being defended. It just looked at moments he was kind of frustrated in both the games, even in the first half in the Akron game where they all kind of looked frustrated. But in the first half, especially against Oregon, did you notice that at all too? Where he looked like it took him a while to kind of find himself into those matchups.
I would go back to the Providence game where I really noticed he wasn't himself. I thought he looked more himself as the tournament kind of went on.
Yes,
you know,
yes.
Better in the second half against Akron. And then I thought he was okay there. The problem, I think, with the Oregon game was, he was on Cousinard and he immediately got a foul. That's why I didn't like him on Cousinard, just because Baylor tends to get fouls in certain situations more than the other guys. And he got a foul right off the get-go, and it was like, oh, man, he can't get two fouls here. We're going to be in big trouble.
Yeah.
But I think beyond that, you know, it just teams had trouble hitting threes here lately. You know, they didn't shoot it very well against Oregon. I mean, they should have been up 15 probably in that first half against Oregon.
Oh, yes.
Or, I mean, Yeah, but getting back to Miller, yeah. So I thought, yeah, I somewhat agree with that. I think he's gotten better as the tournament's gone on, though, and more comfortable. The amazing thing to me in that first half, and I talked with Ashworth and Trey both, and they were both like, yeah, they were leaving these guys wide.
They were.
Yeah. They've never had these looks. Like the one time, like Ashworth said, yeah, the one time I came around the screen and I hesitated because I was like, there's got to be a defender here somewhere.
It's too
good
to be true.
He goes, the other one where he dished the pass to Trey, and Trey like double and triple clutched it because he was like, what? There's nobody around me within 20 feet. And
almost have too much.
I can't imagine that was their game plan, you know? And they were just, I know Dana was pretty upset with some of his complimentary players. I mean, he rode those two guys hard and he's rode them hard all year long, but that was the most amazing thing. I mean, they hit like half of those wide open ones. It would have been a 15-point lead and that game would have been over early.
So let's shift to Friday night. Tennessee will tell you we have this great defense that is sixth in defensive field goal percentage. We lock down teams. Even when we go 3 of 25 from three, like they did against Texas, they hold Texas to one of their lowest point totals of the year. That's what Tennessee has given us. What do you think they're talking about in Knoxville about this Creighton team that worries them?
I just think the multiple sets, things they run, that probably Tennessee hasn't had. You know, they probably haven't faced a team with this offensive efficiency in the SEC. And I would say they, too, have to figure out ways to score. I mean, that I know the Creighton coaches are like, this is okay. They really struggle offensively a lot of times.
Yep.
Which is, you know, I would think Creighton would be like playing a team that's pretty efficient offensively. That would be their big concern. Yeah, certainly it's going to be one of the few times Ashworth has a size advantage on a guy at point guard, but he's so quick and so good.
And he's the defensive player of the year in the SEC.
Yeah.
Ziegler.
They're not very big. I mean, they're not big when you look at their lineup. They're long and athletic, which is, you know, same thing really. But they are tremendously defensive. Barnes has always been a good defensive coach. So I think, you know, and Dana's known him so long that I'm sure that's not something, you know, this is going to come as a shock to Dana. But I think over there, they've got to worry about, I think they'll probably first talk about Shireman. How does him and Connect, how do they match? I mean, they're pretty similar players, really. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think that's pretty interesting. And then I think, what are they going to do inside? Are they just going to go straight up? Are they going to come with a little bit of double? Are they going to mix it up? That's probably where they're going because that's where it really gets Creighton going. If they can get the ball inside, then the inside-outside game works, and then Kalkbrenner can go to work, and everything just flows. You know, even against Oregon with a tremendously talented center, they were able to get the ball inside a little more than they have lately, and things seem to really work out well that way. But later tonight, we're going to have do a YouTube thing with one of the Tennessee Rivals guys, so we'll kind of break down back and forth and break down, and it'll be interesting to talk to him about all that.
The pace in the Akron game, the pace in the Oregon game, obviously Creighton did a much better job of dictating that, and to the point that they were forcing Oregon between fatigue and just the pace that they could ill afford to get into. They struggled with that. Tennessee, we know, is willing to. Is this another game, though, where we look at styles, contrasting styles on what they want to do, and that's where, you know, Creighton is really going to have to stay consistent with what they were able to do, especially getting set up defensively in transition, but also being able to set up their offense in transition like they have all year. You feel like that there's going to be a little more resistance with that with Tennessee?
That's the interesting conundrum here, is that Tennessee is usually a defensive team like that is going to be slow down, and Tennessee can't, you know, they're more than willing to run with you.
Right, more so than the other
teams. A lot of teams are more than willing to run with Creighton, though. And then about halfway through the second half, they're like, wow, they can't keep going like this, can they? And yeah, they can.
I.e. Akron.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. And so that's the interesting thing about Tennessee. They can play different styles if they want to, you know. But it all goes back to them, is how well is, I think the key of the game is how well is Creighton going to be able to defend and make it very difficult for Tennessee to score, because you know they're probably going to get they're going to see one of the better defensive teams they're going to face all year. Creighton is. So the points probably, you know, aren't going to come in the 80s and 90s. Okay, so you've the game will be decided on is Tennessee going to get everything they want and, you know, score at a pretty high pace, then it could be trouble for Creighton.
Hey, so let me shift now to the tournament. So basically chalk. The round of 32 favorites went 15-1. But as the Big East got three to the next round and five of the six were by double-figure wins, Val Ackerman entered the conversation. I want to, because she's in your wheelhouse here, she said the Big East plans to ask the NCAA to reassess the net ranking metric that the selection committee uses to help pick the field. Quote, they were looking at the factors that we have to better understand is how I would say it, comparing the Mountain West to the Big East, but we think we're better than three bids. No, we are. This has been a discussion all week long. And, you know, some leagues are validated. Some are like, they weren't that good. ACC, by the way, has had a good 4 days. Yeah. When you hear that from a commissioner and you are somebody that dives into this, you say what to Val Ackerman? You got a big smile on your face from people that are just, not watching on the stream?
Did she just figure this out now? I mean, you know, I mean, that's kind of like Monday morning quarterbacking there. Karen Mill had a good tweet yesterday. Like, look, between weekends one and two, and you start breaking down the con, that's just not valid. And I, you know, just because, you know, everybody keeps saying, well, they picked six for the Mountain West. Well, no, they didn't. They picked five. One was an automatic and would not have made it according to where they kept. Secondly, I know, I understand others outside of San Diego, I think it's something like 1-19 coming into the tournament, the rest of the teams. But that doesn't mean that this year's team wasn't valid.
Yeah.
Or that the matchups weren't valid. Or to some people's point about Utah State getting blown out, well, they shouldn't have been in that seed range anyway, so they should have had an easier game in their next game. There's so many factors. It's just like I've said a million times, it's just like the football bowl games before everybody opted out. You can't judge anything off one game to how good or bad a conference is. As far as the net, yeah, they've got to look at some things. You know, the...
Because the ACC's talking about going down to 18 conference games now.
Yeah.
To help their teams.
Yeah. Well, absolutely. I don't know. This year, though, but this year, if you've got the muck of Wake Forest, North Carolina State, Virginia Tech, you're beating up on those teams all together. I don't know if that's going to help you, where the Mountain West was helped. I mean, it's just the way it is. But now, I'm always wondering about this because I'm not smart enough mathematically to know all this stuff. Like, how does KenPom, as a predictive measure, have teams ranked the morning of the first day of the season? You know what I mean? Like, how do you really... You can take everything from last year, but it's a different year. And then that, if you're ranked high, like in the net to start out, you stay there. Like BYU this year, right? You're there. And so that's the thing I don't understand, like how all of that works. The big thing they've got to do is they've got to cap the offensive and defensive efficiency numbers. They can't just let a team go out, play just nobody in the non-conference like the Big 12 did, run up scores of 40 point plus wins, and then that boosts their offensive and defensive efficiencies, which hence boosts the net, and away you go. You know, so you know people are saying, well, you can't argue at the like what was it the I think DeCourcy put this out like the top of the 16 left, they're 13 of them are in the top 20 or 14 are in the top 20. So you go see it's working. Yeah, but in some instances to pick the teams, but I can see Val. I mean. Yeah, you know, St. John's need to play a tougher schedule. If had they played a tougher schedule, they would have been in. I'm pretty sure of that.
Or avoid getting beat by Michigan at home.
Yes, yeah, yeah, exactly. So, you know, those games in November matter. You don't like to think about them in March, but they matter.
Yeah.
We're trying to figure this out when it comes to the game times, the tip-off times, West Coast getting the early games, East Coast getting late games. I mean, you got to witness this.
What did you just do there?
You just
guns to the head, man.
I mean, you got to witness this in Pittsburgh, but we're seeing the same thing now on Friday too, with the East Coast, West Coast swing? Is there just something about evening primetime games on the West Coast? They don't like that?
This week doesn't bother me as much because you have four games. You have an early session, a late. You know, it's relatively close together as far as time. So I don't. Why you start a game at 10:45 out there and then start a game at 10 o'clock on the East Coast? It's
right.
It's just, like, what are they doing? Like, do we really need that two games to start out to be in their own window? I've never understood that. Like, why can't you at least have two games going on? You know, I understand you want to have a feature game. Then your feature game is Arizona out in Salt. That game didn't move the needle for me.
Yeah.
You know, if you wanted to have the feature game, you should have had Creighton in Oregon or, you know, some storyline. The Oakland game. What a game. Mm-hmm. I mean, what a fabulous game. Mm-hmm. I just don't get it. And it's just another, you know, feather in the cap of the NCAA just being awful. I mean, did they just not think about these things?
Well,
you know what?
So there's the discussion about, look at Danny Hurley was trying. He goes, wow, they're really making it tough on us. Yeah. You went to Brooklyn and now you're going to bust to Boston.
Yeah.
The team you're playing, ask Brian Dutcher. So they're playing late in Spokane. They don't get back to campus in San Diego until Monday morning at 3:30 local time. Then they got to go across the country to play the early tip on Thursday in Boston.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right. Yeah, absolutely. It's, you know, but I mean, that's the way it works. How's it? Yeah, Danny shouldn't be complaining about anything.
No.
Everybody just looked at the names on the regions. But if you looked at the seed lines, they were all pretty close. Mm-hmm. I mean, it wasn't like it was outrageously off base. That's just how it was. And, you know, you looked at your weakest four was probably Auburn, and guess what happened? They got beat.
Yep.
We appreciate it. You going to Detroit?
I am not going to Detroit.
Oh.
There's a lot of, you know, Easter, first of all.
Okay.
And that's a big thing.
And?
My producer can't go. So, because of a commitment. So, you know.
All right.
You could have knocked out Pittsburgh and Detroit all in a week's time.
You could have just stayed on the East Coast.
Yeah. You
know,
yeah.
Pittsburgh, Detroit's a pretty quick trip there. Are a lot of Steeler fans that went there when they won their Super Bowl in Ford Field. Quick little trip.
Yeah. A couple other things, too. And it's, you know.
All right. Life got in the way.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, a lot of people didn't go last week, but hey. Pretty cool to be there for that game for both those games.
I'm sure.
All right. Well, we'll talk again next week, and we'll talk about the Final Four and also why Scottie Scheffler is a 3-1 favorite against a field of 150 at the Masters.
Scotty,
absolutely. Now we're talking.
Yes, we are. It's Tim Kruger. You can follow him on Twitter, TK Brackets, of course. Blue Jay Banter, and as Tim said, they'll have a interview with a expert from Tennessee, which is something that doesn't roll off the lips very often. it's coming up on the next edition of Blue Jay Banter. Steve Merfeld will join us next on Mornings with Sharp and Hanley on 1620 The Zone.